If I'd been out till 2:45, would you lock the door? Will you still need me? Will you still feed me when I'm 64?
This is Dr. Rob Stahl with What Should You Expect at Your Age? What you should expect at your age is a lot. And my listeners, especially the older adults and caregivers out there, shouldn't settle for less. Today's show, we'll talk about safety, how you can make sure you're doing everything you can to protect yourself from accidents. I have with me today Patty Ann Gazinski, who is a volunteer with the Erie County Department of Emergency Services, and Kitty Sullivan, a representative for Lifeline Systems. Welcome, ladies. I'm glad you could be here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Can you tell us a little bit about your backgrounds and your current responsibilities?
I have spent a lot of time working in community centers, specifically working with seniors. At present, I'm with the Lifeline Systems through the Visiting Nursing Association here based in Buffalo. My job is to be out telling people about the Lifeline service.
I'm a volunteer with the Erie County Department of Emergency Services and have an interest in senior safety because my grandmother died from a fall when I was a teenager, so that's been my interest. I was 16 and was her sole caregiver at the time, and she needed to go to the bathroom one evening, and I didn't know how to transfer anybody properly at that time, and as I was helping her get up from the bedroom, she fell and hit her head on the edge of the dresser and died of a concussion 2 weeks later. So for a 16-year-old, that's pretty devastating to lose the most important person in your life.
She had bleeding inside her head,
yes,
probably.
She did. She also had leukemia. So it was just very hard for me to take at 16, and that sort of remained with me. And so in her honor, I've always been interested in seniors and keeping them safe.
Kitty, have you had any personal experiences?
My first job in a community center was during the blizzard of 77. Unfortunately, in the process of delivering medications and meals to people, I found a lot of people down and deceased. And, you know, that really stayed with me. As you said, Patty, it was quite traumatic. And it occurred to me that there has to be a way for people to be able to get help and not to be so isolated.
Tell us about Lifeline Systems and what the scope of that company is.
So there are Lifeline programs across the United States and in Canada as well. Lifeline has been providing emergency response services for 30 years. I think we tend to think of an older person as being perhaps the most needy, but it really is designed for anybody of any age who has a medical condition that makes them a little bit more at risk, or maybe they live alone and don't have much of a support system. It is a way for them to signal for help, because you want to get help quickly, but you also want to get the appropriate help. They're lightweight, they're attractive, but probably most importantly, they're completely waterproof. So they really are designed to be worn in the bath and in the shower. They can get wet and go under the water, and the system still functions. It works with another piece of equipment that we call a communicator. It's a small box that literally your phone plugs into. When we do an installation, what we're actually doing is programming your button to work with your communicator. When you press your button, that's how you activate the system. Your button sends a signal from your button to your communicator, and it can do that from a good distance away, like 400 and 500 feet, because when you need help, you might be in another room or on another floor or in some area. It could be out in the yard, and that's a very important concept for Lifeline.
What can be done to stay safe and cozy during Buffalo's most famous season? And we could start with Patty Ann.
I think one of the most important things that people can do is to make sure that they have carbon monoxide detectors installed in their home. Make sure that they're functioning properly. Make sure that you know how to use them, where they should be installed.
It also behooves people to get their furnace checked for safety.
That's correct. We suggest that you have a professional come and look at your chimney, not only for carbon monoxide, but for fire safety reasons. Check out your heating systems. And there are other things that people could do. Be sure not to use your oven as a heating source.
Now, let's just go back to the carbon monoxide detector. Where should these be placed, and where can you get them, and what's the approximate cost?
You can get them anywhere from, like, Home Depot to Walmart. And I don't mean that to be an advertisement for anywhere, but generally any.
They're widely available.
They're very widely available, and they cost around $30. But I think if you're a senior, you need to be able to put it where you can hear it.
Now, what else for the winter? And let's talk right around the house and things you can do right around the house.
Don't completely close in your house so that you have that airflow coming in through there. You need to take care, if you use a wood stove, again, that your chimney has been checked, that you know how to properly use it. Make sure that all your flues are cleaned. make sure that your stove vent, the vent above your stove, has been cleaned, because that can pull odors out and gases out and also provide some fresh air. And make sure that if you use a fireplace or a wood stove that you're using hardwoods that burn clearly. Sometimes people use things like old railroad ties.
All right. Now, around the house, we have sidewalks, and things get pretty slippery during the winter.
Having an ice melter is important, and sometimes people won't use it because they don't like the damage it does to the concrete. They don't like what it does when you track it into the house. So if you use a potassium-based ice melter, then it doesn't get the damage, so that you can get a nice, clear sidewalk and still not have to worry about damage to the grass or the garden.
And try to clear a driveway before you drive the car over it, because that just presses the snow down to create that ice layer.
And if you're in a position where you can't remove it yourself, hire somebody to remove it for you.
Well, to that point, I was just going to add that it's probably a good idea, as you think about those long, drawn-out months, is to kind of get to know who your neighbors are. You know, it might not be a bad idea to just once in a while check in, and kids can do that too, you know, just and maybe help each other out a little bit. You know, sometimes a community effort, sort of a concerted effort, just sort of helps move things along a little bit.
You know, lifeline system, certainly, as you're clearing walks, if you're doing it yourself, if you happen to be on the back porch bringing some garbage out, then take a fall, and you can be back there behind a bush, mm-hmm. and no one can see you. So that's where something like Lifeline
sure.
would come in, and also just making people aware that you're there and to check in on you.
Mm-hmm.
What about slippery surfaces? Any specific tips? You know, we'll talk more fully about the whole fall prevention issue and balance, but what about specifically walking on slippery sidewalks?
Well, I think at any age, the high heels have got to go.
I agree.
It doesn't matter if you're...
It's bad for your back.
It doesn't matter if you're 25 or 75. The heels mm-hmm. just don't cut it. I did a little experiment last week on the ice at the Twin Rinks with some research I'd been doing to make sure that the tips we were going to get today on how to walk on ice truly worked. I took a pair of my aunt, who's 78, her overboots, and some sneakers, and tried to walk across the ice rink to see which one gave us the best traction and how to balance walking across the ice. And it was fairly interesting. The first thing I instinctively tried to do was to take tiny, little bitty steps on my tiptoes. And what I learned was, when you walk on your tiptoes, all it does is help you fall forward a little faster.
But you want that surface area to provide as much traction as possible,
absolutely.
Right?
And you have to make sure that the shoes or the boots or your overboots that you're wearing don't have a smooth bottom. I also learned that your hands help balance you. And I tried to walk across with my hands in my pockets, and I felt your hands really help make that difference balancing. Mm-hmm. All of my dress shoes failed the test, whether they were flat or whether they were heels, because they all had a nice smooth, they had a nice smooth
okay.
bottom.
The smooth surface has to go.
It just didn't work. Sneakers provided a little bit more grip, but not a whole lot, because you tend to wear your sneakers all year round, so it wears them out on the bottom, and you get flat patches on them. What worked best were a pair of winter boots that had that nice lug sole on it, taking small shuffling steps, flat-footed, with my arms by my side.
Does Lifeline allow for someone to have a family member notified if mm-hmm. The alarm goes off? How does that work?
Well, that's actually the first thing that happens. A monitor at Lifeline picks up your signal and calls you back. Now, if you need help, you're probably not going to be next to the phone. You may not even be in the same room. Inside of the box, the communicator that's attached to your phone, there's a very sensitive speakerphone. So the first thing they want to do is talk to you. They want to ask you if you're okay, do you need help? And if you do need help, depending on the nature of the type of help that you need, they may, in fact, call one of your neighbors.
Just an aside, how does Lifeline respond to someone who likes to talk a lot and is lonely, isolated, and they like to hear the voice on the other end?
They do. And, you know, they're never going to cut you off. They're always going to hear a compassionate voice. You're always going to hear somebody that has a concern about your health and well-being. There is a story that goes around Lifeline about the lady who was always calling to see if she could order a pizza. Well, you know, actually, that she had a need. She was hungry. In this particular case, Lifeline contacted one of this individual's responders and said, you know, you might want to connect this person up with maybe a church group or a youth group or or somebody that might assist her. But
or the local pizza place.
Or the local pizza place. That's
one of the responders.
So that's exactly right.
Just roughly, how much does it cost? Is it a monthly basis?
Mm-hmm.
And then installation fee, so everyone knows what's involved.
Well, it is a monthly charge, and it is mostly a privately paid for service. At present, there aren't insurance companies that cover the cost, although we certainly have lots of family members who do that kind of thing for their loved one. The monthly charge is $39. That covers the cost of renting the equipment and servicing the equipment. And it also gives you that monitoring service 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. So no matter what day it is or what time it is, there's always somebody that's going to answer your call.
We're going to go through this home safety checklist, and it's divided into several areas around the house. For example, in housekeeping, do you clean up spills as soon as they occur, especially spills, obviously, on the floor? Do you keep floors and stairways clean and free of clutter? Do you put away books, magazines, sewing supplies, and other objects as soon as you're through with them and never leave them on floors or stairways? And Kitty's shaking your head no to that one.
I got
to
work on that.
You're helping Kitty, too.
Thank you.
Do you store frequently used items on shelves that are within easy reach? Maybe use a step stool or have to stand on the top step of a step stool, which, as we know, could be somewhat dangerous. And then it goes on to floors about... do all small rugs have non-skid backings? You don't want to go flying like Aladdin on your throw rugs in your house. Do you have a non-skid rug on the bathroom floor? Do you keep soap in an easy-to-reach receptacle? Or are you standing in the shower and reaching awkwardly to grab the soap or shampoo, and that could predispose you to an accident? Do you have grab bars in there? Do you have enough good lighting to eliminate shadowy areas, and especially at night? And here's a simple tip when using a ladder or a step stool. Do you face the steps and keep your body between the side rails? And that also behooves the kids to be taught that, you know, when grandma or grandpa's at the house, you know, you can't leave everything all over the place because it might let them have an accident. Now, here's something I think is important that probably very few people know about unless you're a skier. Do you know how to reduce injury in case you fall? Patty Ann, what can you say about that?
I think it's very important to learn how to fall.
Can you describe it over the radio?
I can try.
Okay.
I can try. You can actually practice learning to fall by sitting down on the floor with your legs flat out in front of you and start to go back and see what your body is doing. One of the things that you don't want to do is when you fall, put your hands out in front of you, because then you break a wrist. Fall on a side. You know, it's hard. Do I hit my head or do I break a hip? Which is,
that's right.
Which
what about,
is, which is, which
or
is
break a hand,
thing to do,
which
or
is worse,
hip,
breaking
which
a
is
hand
worse.
Or a hip.
Try so to make yourself as small as possible when you fall. Try to protect your head.
So like a fetal position?
Sort of like a fetal position when you go down. Which is worse? Do I break my hip? Do I break my hand? Do I hit my head?
My vote for older people certainly would be to avoid breaking a hip.
That I was going to say, from my nursing perspective, breaking your hip can be a very dangerous thing, because then it involves a hospital stay and it entails all kinds of other things.
It's a high chance of complication. That's right.
Mm-hmm. Until I got my bifocals and looked down at a stairway from the first time with my bifocals on, it was very difficult for me to differentiate one stair from another. So if you have stairs at home, if you can sort of forget about decor for a moment and perhaps have the carpeting on stairways a different color or a different pattern, or put a strip
along each edge,
along
so you
each
know
edge that you're not right. going to trip on, so that you know where the stair begins, because carpeting tends to blend.
Let's go through some statistics, and this is leading into fire safety issues. More than 1,200 Americans aged 65 and older die as a result of fires each year. Older adults comprise 25% of all fire deaths. Older adults living alone have a 30% or greater risk of unintentional injury, and approximately two-thirds of burn injuries to the elderly occur when the victim is sleeping or trying to escape a fire. So, Patty Ann, having been a firefighter involved with emergency services, what can people do about it?
The most important thing that people need to know, and people forget all of the time, is that if your house is on fire, you don't call 911 from inside the burning building. You get yourself out first and call from somewhere else. Cooking fires happen a lot for seniors. Most people aren't aware of the fact that your pajamas that you wear as an adult have absolutely no flame retardant on them. They're not subject to the fire retardant standards that young children's pajamas are.
Now, what about if someone is in a fire? What's the best way to get out of that?
Two things to know. If you're cooking at the stove or any time that your clothing catches on fire, the first thing you need to remember is stop, drop, and roll. Don't run. Don't try to get yourself to the sink to turn the water on. Don't try to run to the shower to put it out. You drop yourself to the ground. You stop running. You drop yourself to the ground, and you roll. And you don't want to flop on the floor like a fish, because that's not going to do it. You actually want to roll one way. If you come to a wall, then you roll back the other way. If your sleeves are on fire, once you're down on the floor, keep your hands down by your side and roll so that you don't bring the fire up to your face, because you want to protect your airway and your breathing ability. If it's your lower body that's on fire, once you're on the ground, cover your face.
And you're trying to suffocate the fire.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You take the oxygen away from it, and then it will stop.
I think another important thing to know is sometimes people try to put the fire out instead of just getting out and call the fire department, because mm-hmm. they're embarrassed, or they don't want their family to know because they're afraid that their family will put them in a home or take away their freedom and their, you know, give them some limitations. I think that people just need to know mistakes happen. Get out. Close the door behind you.
In the few minutes we have left, let's just touch on accidental poisoning. When does it typically happen, and what could be done about it?
The biggest type of accidental poisoning for seniors comes from their medications. Make sure you know which ones could be mixed with over-the-counter medicines. Make sure you tell your healthcare providers all of the over-counter medicines that you're taking. Sometimes people think that, well, because it's herbal or over-the-counter, it must be safe, so I can take it with my medicines.
Well, we're going to have to start wrapping up. It's all the time we have today, and I thank you so much, Patty Ann and Kitty. Great show, a lot of great information, and I'm sure that the information that you shared today will help someone and maybe mm-hmm. prevent a real tragedy. This is Dr. Rob Stahl. See you next week.